giving you a little warning. This episode contains coarse adult language.
Hi, Art Supply Posse. If you've been listening for a while, you know I delight when someone reaches out to me and expresses interest in being part of the posse. Today's guest is one of those, artist Kylie O'Grady. And the extra cool thing about Kylie is she has a little Australian link, I guess, for the want of a better word, which, you know, I've got to love the Aussie. I've got to just champion the Aussiness everywhere because, you know, that's what I do. So hi, Kylie. Welcome so much to the Art Supply Posse.
Hi, Kim. It's great to be chatting with you. Yeah, the Aussie connection is pretty nice, actually. Yeah, it makes me feel more comfortable right off the bat. My mum's Australian.
Yeah, so good.
And you say you were in Victoria?
I am in Victoria. Yeah, in a very small town.
What's funny is I'm in Victoria, BC, Canada.
Oh no, really? Oh, that's yeah. Awesome.
I just thought that was kind of cute.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it a lot. So I am very curious to know how did art come to be such an important part of your life? Because obviously, like, it's a big facet of your life. It's not the only facet. You're a mum. There's so many other components to Kylie as a person, but how did art become to be a big part of that?
I think it was never not a part of my life, like from being a kid. It was just always there. And then actually when my first trip to Australia with my mom, her aunt, my great auntie Robin, she was a painter, and she had an exhibit in Sydney while we were visiting when I was just 9 years old. And it left this massive impression on me. My auntie Rob was so glamorous, and she was a wonderful painter of the Australian outback and just all different areas all over Australia. And it was just a huge influence. And I was there looking at this glamorous woman and this whole gallery set up with all of her work. And I remember watching these red dots being put on everything. And I asked her what that was, and she was like, oh darling, they've sold, you know. And it was my first introduction to being an artist is like a career, like that's a thing you can do, you know. So that just kind of always left this massive impression, and I just idolized her. And I ended up going more into like kind of theatrical arts through high school, and that didn't really do a lot there, but I just always kind of dabbled in things. And then I left the country. I left Canada to move to Italy and New York when I was 18 to become a model. I had agencies out there. And while I was in New York, I just was always kind of drawing and that. And I ended up having a friend that opened up this kind of gallery. It was like a cafe gallery place. And he said, oh, you're always drawing this series of yours. Do you want to have a show? And so I ended up having my first art show there. And it was just these drawings that I called the skinnies. And it was just all these little characters that were kind of stereotypical from a small town, like the sheriff and the lady of the night and the skateboarder and the bride. And they were all kind of these quirky characters. And so then after that, I kind of went, oh, and the whole series, it was a series of 30, they ended up selling as a whole piece. And I went, oh, okay, well, maybe I could do something with this. Maybe that means something. But I think it's always that imposter syndrome that creeps back in, you know.
Yeah.
So I ended up moving back to the small town that I was raised in on the BC coast. It's actually not so small anymore. It's right beside, I don't know if you're familiar with Whistler, Canada.
No, only vaguely.
Right. It's like north of Vancouver. It's a big ski town. But I moved back there to Squamish, not Whistler. And it's like right beside there. Anyways, long-winded, doesn't matter. But I moved back, and my mom's a hairdresser, and she was like, oh, what are you going to do here now? that you've moved back and you're not living overseas. And I was like, well, I don't know. I was working in a pub bartending. And she said, you want to be a hairdresser. So I kind of dropped the art thing and became a hairdresser. And then, yeah, I quit that about 4.5 years ago now, because I wanted to do art full time. And I was in the middle of moving back to Italy again. And yeah, so I just kind of committed.
Yeah. So that must be pretty spectacular to have seen your auntie's exhibition at 9 years of age, see all those red dots, which tells you that, yeah, actually you can be an artist and make money from being an artist, or earn a living from being an artist, or whatever. And then you have your own exhibition, your very first one, and all 30 pieces sold. Like, that's got to be pretty cool and pretty special. Yeah. Obviously, because of life things, you didn't then jump straight into being a working artist, which is totally okay. But that's still got to be in the back of your mind as a really cool thing to have sort of become. I guess, because not only is it you having done it, but you've seen a family member do it, and you've been able to make that same thing happen, or a similar thing happen.
Yeah, look, I mean, isn't it funny, hindsight? You know, I thought it was incredible at the time because, you know, I was broke and I had a boyfriend here back in Canada who I'm actually with now. We ended up reconnecting. We got back together 4 years ago. But him and I were together when I moved back, and I was like, oh, you know, we're broke and we're like 21 years old or something. I was like, oh, maybe like my art has sold, you know, like we could have some money and like go on a road trip or something. And so I called my friend and he said, oh, I've called every O'Grady in Canada. Like, because of course there was no cell phones and I had no email or like anything like that at the time. It was like 2001 or something. And he said, oh, I've called every O'Grady, like, you know, we've got a buyer for all your stuff. So I went, oh, you're kidding. So yeah, that was a really massive moment. But then you're like, oh, no, I'm not that good. The person that bought that must have just, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know what you think, but it's just that imposter syndrome that creeps in again. You know, it's like it stops you from keeping on.
Why do you think that's a thing? Like, why for you do you think, I mean, because honestly, it's literally, I'm not sure I've actually spoken to anyone who hasn't had some element of that, even just a small amount. But for you specifically, considering the fact that, you know, all those 30 pieces were sold, why do you think it still popped up anyway?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I think it's funny. Maybe women too. It's like a self-worth thing, or, you know, it's, and then I think also living in New York, and I was living in Milan and Italy, and I think maybe coming back to my hometown was really like a, I don't know if I saw it as a failure, but maybe something underlining was like that. You know what I mean? Maybe that was part of it.
Being a smaller town, not being as fabulous as New York, says the person who's actually never right. been there before. But like, I can imagine, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Like, you sort of, there's always that thing of, you know, to do well at anything, especially if you are in a smaller town, you've got to go upwards and outwards and expand. And generally the assumption is to be successful, you've got to be successful somewhere bigger, somewhere more spectacular. But yeah, I mean, not really, especially now, not right? Really, especially now, know, because you
the
and
irony,
I are in,
yeah. The irony in the end, though, is that, I mean, the people in my town were like just the most amazing cheerleaders. I have so many people that have collected my art that live in that town, you know, like people that have collected multiple pieces of mine, and they're from my small town, and they cheer me on, and they've come to every one of my art openings. And, you know, to have a small town and have, you know, 100 people pass through an art opening, like, that's really spectacular in my mind. You know, you really feel the love. And ironically, I mean, talking about the red dots, my Auntie Rob, And I had I did a concept show at a friend's gallery in my town in 2018. And my auntie Rob actually sent me a message saying, "Oh, I wish I could be there," and kind of cheering me on. But she was quite unwell. She was in the hospital at the time, and we were hoping she would rally. And I just felt her there at the opening night of that show. And it was the first time, like, I'd sold lots of work before, but I'd never had like a concept cohesive show. And then all of these like red dots started showing up on my pieces, and I really felt her there. And she passed a couple days after the opening of that show, actually. And, you know, you have your stuff in New York, these big cities, and it was the small town that I grew up in that, you know, mm-hmm. had that kind of support and that type of experience. So it doesn't really matter where you are, I guess.
Well, at the end of the day, people who like art live in all sorts of places, cities, right? towns, you know, out in the, as we would say, in the outback. Yes. And as long as those people have some kind of, I guess, you know, a little bit of extra spending ability, then, or, you know, and, you know, they're going to, if they see something and it talks to them, they're going to want to buy it. That they're living where they're living for whatever reason, mm-hmm. but like that doesn't mean that people living in a small town can't, and your proof of that, can't support, can't love, can't enjoy art and want it on their walls. Like, yeah, it is a trope that I think a lot of us sort of think about and fall into, that, you know, to be successful you have to be somewhere big, but it mm-hmm. really is nonsense. And especially now with technology and the ability to go online and have the ability to purchase artwork from across the globe, you know, like, yeah. I can think off the top of my head three different pieces that I have purchased from people that I've never met before. Mm-hmm. One of them I've spoken to on the podcast, but aside from her, do you know what I mean? I don't know them in any yeah. way, shape, or form, other than I've appreciated their work and made the decision and bought it.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's pretty cool that you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I just had that experience this year with a couple of artists that I've met and just, like, interacted with through Instagram. And the joy of having those pieces arrive was, like, phenomenal, because there was something else intimate about it. It was almost better than buying from a gallery where you don't meet the artist, because I had commented on their work over the years and, you know, kind of read up on them, and they chatted back, and there was some kind of an interaction, and it became a personal thing. And then this piece arrives, even, you know, it's not sight unseen, but it's, you still don't know by a picture, mm-hmm. right?
No.
And yeah. Yeah, to have that interaction and then, like, purchase the piece, like, I was over the moon this year about that.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. So mm-hmm. I'm curious to know then, because obviously I've done some research. I've looked into Kylie O'Grady and her artwork, and I see a lot of mixed media, which I love because I think it's the best. But I'm curious to know why. That's a big call. My goodness me, I might be in trouble for that. But I'm curious to know, what is it about mixed media that you love specifically?
Oh, gosh, is it fear of commitment? I don't know.
Yeah, of course it is.
Of course it is. It's something deep-rooted, right? Oh, gosh. I feel like what it started with for me was the fact that I'm not a formally trained artist. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't kind of execute something with the perfection, because I have a problem with perfectionism. I couldn't execute it perfectly in just one medium, because I wasn't a master of anything. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't been taught all the rules and the thirds and the framing and the composition. Everything is gut instinct on it. And so if something wasn't working, it was like, oh, you know what I could do? Or if you messed up something, it was like, oh, you know, how do I cover that up and still make it look on purpose is really kind of, I think, where it was born from, you know. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, well, I really like that together. What if I did this? And what if I did that? And what if I amalgamated it? And then it was like taking all those things and how do you marry that together now? How do you make that cohesive, right?
Mm.
And yeah, I think that's where it was born from, is just my insecurity of not being formally trained, but wanting to make something beautiful or, you know, attractive in some way. Mm. Like, you know, if you're a magpie, right? Like,
yeah, yeah, gosh, yeah.
Does that make sense? So
it does. It does. And it's got me thinking. So then, like, within that sphere, is there particular materials that you find yourself drawn to more frequently? Or maybe another way of putting it is there something you wouldn't use? Like, is there a supply or a found object that, you know, for whatever reason, I just do not want to touch it?
I think I have a tiny little fear with oil paint. Mm-hmm. Just because I haven't used it before.
Mm-hmm. Same, don't worry.
Yeah. I became part of this little art group. They were called the Peps. It was like the artist pep rally through another. Anyways, there was like a bunch of women from the state, from America, and a few from Canada. And we were just a small group. It wasn't a bunch of women. There was like six of us. And they started talking about oils that are water soluble.
Oh, yes.
Apparently, they're extremely expensive. And I thought, oh, maybe I'd try that. But yeah, maybe I don't think it's that I wouldn't go to oil. I've never done really like cardboard or, you know, this kind of collage work.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done a lot of like magazine cutouts because I really enjoy all of my flowers are hand painted. And then I do that. I guess I really enjoy tedious things because I individually cut out every single petal with an X-Acto knife and then arrange the piece.
That's so incredible. And I'm so glad you just said that because I was looking at some of those while I was doing my research, which, you know, is just me looking on Instagram for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, oh, my goodness, these are stunning. How does she do this? Why? I need to know. They're fabulous. They are just so fabulous.
Oh, thank
and I
you.
Wouldn't have thought – I wouldn't have thought to do something like that. Like, where did that idea come from?
I think I was working a lot in charcoals, and I always did quite like dark faces, and that kind of like made me happy. Like everyone was like, "Oh, mm-hmm. You know, the skinnies are great; they're lovely little characters. Why are they all sad? You know, everybody's so sad. Are you sad?" It was always, you know, and I was like, "No, yeah. I'm not sad. I don't know how to draw a smile." You know,
yeah, it doesn't need to be any deeper than that. It does not.
It really
wasn't,
honestly. Like when I say like my technique or whatever was born out of like not knowing something, that's the truth. It's everything mm-hmm. is troubleshooting, right? Like, oh, well, they look kind of probably, well, I mean, come on. I started doing those skinnies with the sad faces when I was modeling. I mean, nobody's allowed to smile. Uh-huh. Wasn't doing catalog work, you know, like, you know, everybody was like, it was 1999, you know,
yeah, you were looking off into smile. The distance like, yeah, no, gosh, no, oh, no
right?
way.
So, I mean, you know, it was just, that was kind of the joke. I was like, well, you know, if I ever learn how to draw a smile, you know, I'll do that, right? Like, but it just kind of became the signature, and I really found them endearing, and they kind of spoke to, you know, people's hearts. Mm. They connected with people, so I kind of stuck with that. So getting to the point of the flowers, everything was kind of dark, but I enjoyed that look. I enjoy artists' work that's like that. And then I kind of just went through this really tough phase when I was like 30. I don't know where there's that existential thing again. I don't know. But then I was like, you know what? I was living alone, had this great little house that I was renting. I loved it. And I was like, I was a workaholic at the hair salon. And I just wanted to come home to some color. And I was like, I'm going to start painting flowers. And so I started painting these flowers, just like tons of them every single night. And I'd just stay up and paint all these flowers and cut them all out. And I would just cover these beautiful, like old hardwood floors in this little house that I was renting. And I would come home to that every day. And I was like, well, what am I going to do with them? And I just kind of had this vision of like like they were all in water. And I'd never used resin before, but I kind of just thought, I wonder if that would work, and tried it out 3 days before a show that they were due to be in and prayed that it would work.
Good move.
Very smart. It's how I work. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it was kind of just the flowers were born out of a dark period, and I went, well, let's try some color, you know.
I really like that though, that resin. They just, there's something about, I don't know, it's not a medium I've used myself, but it does something to the flowers.
It takes them to another level. Absolutely, it really does. Yeah, when you see them dry, I do that on a 93-pound cotton press paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they're beautiful. I mean, they're all, you know, the bleeds of all the inks and the mix of ink. It's like acrylic ink and watercolor that I mix, and some black Chinese ink sometimes. And then you put that resin on and they just, like, they come alive. It's amazing. And that's really kind of keeps me interested to the end of the project, is knowing that that's coming, you know?
Yeah. Well, it takes them from being one thing to another, like not a completely different thing, but in some ways, I guess a better version, maybe.
And it's a surprise for me every time, which keeps me interested, because, you know, let's be honest, that can get pretty tedious, you know. But then it's
of course,
if there's a surprise at the end with the result every time, that's really cool. And honestly, sometimes it screws up in the right direction. And that's really exciting too, because you just get to kind of work on the fly with that, you know.
I wonder if it's not screwing up though, because is it not by now that you, maybe you're not aware of it, maybe it's a subconscious thing, but you are guiding the outcome, even if it's not what you necessarily had in mind, but no?
I'm really great at self-deprecating, if you haven't already noticed. But honestly, at this point, with the, you know, screwing up in the right direction, it's always meant to be. I mean, it's given things so much more depth, and it's really, that's how I've started to find my own style, is by these little happy accidents, is really more what it is. And that really kind of, you know, it's like finding your path through the woods. Right? Like that little mistake opens up a clearing, and then you can go farther. Just when you thought, oh, I've done enough with this series, or this has run its course, or I'm bored now, then one of these lovely little things will happen. Like in my last show this year in March, I was doing the faces and the flowers put together. And one of the pieces is entitled An Apology, and it's a girl holding a red heart. And it's my hands that I've drawn. And I placed everything so perfectly so that the hands were showing just this much of the heart and, you know, outside of the hands, so that when the resin was, you know, all this stuff, and tediously I pulled it all apart, I put it back together. And then in the end, the resin made the hands like translucent, so you could see the heart through the hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, you're kidding me. You know, oh, it's right before the show and I've ruined my favorite piece. And then I went, wait a second, that actually looks so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it made the piece. So now it's like another tool in the toolbox, right?
Absolutely. So because I noticed, and I'm glad you mentioned the faces and the hearts, because obviously, to the listener who may not have seen your work, Kim, this is not obvious, but I noticed lots of faces and lots of hearts, love hearts. So why those motives specifically? Is it simply because you enjoy making them, or is there something else going on?
I think it was like a journey in kind of healing and a bit of cheesiness. You know, now, I mean, since COVID, we've seen these hearts everywhere and all this stuff, but I started doing them before that. And I think it was just because I was always kind of a cynical person. And I just went, you know, I think it's time just to be a little bit cheesy, You know,
mm-hmm.
It started with the show in 2018, and it was all these resin flowers that were on plexiglass. And I don't know if you saw it on there. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Because all these flowers, they spelt out fuck off
mm-hmm.
for the show. And there was like the heart emojis. And that was when everybody just started kind of really using emojis. And I was really fascinated by it. And I was like, you know, this is representing your face. You know that, right? Like I couldn't wrap my head around the fact that like these two hearts for eyes, it just seems so cheesy and ridiculous to me. I use this emoji all the time now. Like, I, you know.
Yeah, that's just how it goes.
Right? Confession, where I was just like, so the format of everything was like in squares, everything was square, you know, as a reference to Instagram, and because it was all square shapes for the photos and that. Mm-hmm. Do you remember mm-hmm. that when it first started? It was always.
Yeah, that's all it had.
Now I can't frame anything at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's like, oh, this is not working. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the show was, it was kind of just on this, like, how words and emojis and how language is changing. And I just wanted people to go to the show and have a chat about it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And how fuck off doesn't mean that anymore. It means so many different things. So it was a fun show because it got people talking and having a bit of fun with it. And I had everyone kind of interact with a big piece for that as well, kind of venting their own F-offs.
So it
was good.
You've mentioned riding by the seat of your pants when it comes to a show, but how do you prepare for that? Like, what comes first? Do you have a body of work and then someone sees it and says, we want you to show? Or like, I'm always fascinated by the process because I know it's different for everyone anyway, but like how do shows work out for you?
It's different all the time. That last one in 2018, I was part of a group show, well, with another, two female artists in, October, November of 2018. And my solo, that conceptual show was in June of 2018. And that was, they were both at the same gallery. I had no idea what I was going to do. I think it just started, I just wanted to do something on plexiglass. And I was like, well, how will I make this work? What am I going to do? And so I just basically just go by, color. And I think that just started with me having only enough. I'd used up the last of this certain green ink, and it's like I picked it up at some German store in Milan. And so, yeah, obviously I wasn't going to get it here, right? Like, so I went, oh, I only have this many. What am I going to do with it? And so they were just kind of there, and I went, oh, it's a U. And I kind of went, oh, like F U. Oh, that's what I'll do, right? Like, you know. So it just evolved from a color, and that I only had so many, so I couldn't do a full piece like I normally would. And so it became letters, and they fit perfectly on the square plexiglass. So it's random is what I'm getting at. It's just an organic, random situation.
Well, I mean, it works, or it seems to work.
So far, so good. And I've always said, I think the reason I procrastinate, I've never fixed my procrastination or my lack of planning, is because I've never fallen fully on my face. I haven't, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not like, oh, everything's gone super great. It really hasn't. I would change a million things, obviously, when you look back, you know, but I haven't had a massive, really bad fail. To go, see, now you learned your lesson, right? So I've just kind of kept with it. I'd have to say, though, this last show was the first time I'd actually really prepared. in trying to not do that. However, I still was by the seat of my pants for the last week, and resin was still quasi dry as we were hanging the show on a few pieces. So there was that.
How do you decide how many pieces work within not just the show itself, I guess, but like if we think about a body of work, you know, as in a particular, I don't know, a set of parameters that perhaps there, is it all right, do they just come and until they don't come anymore, or do you get bored of it and it's time to move on to something else? Because I think one of the things with mixed media is because there are so many different elements at play, you can get easily distracted and your mm-hmm. brain can take you somewhere else and you suddenly don't want to work on what you're working on now because you've had this fabulous idea for this other thing over here. But with sort of setting yourself up for a show, do you kind of have in mind, all right, I've got to have 10 pieces or I've got to have 40 pieces? Like, what's that like?
That's a tough one. I think this, I never really thought about that.
Well, that's like, in itself.
I think this last show, it was a week before, and I'd never actually seen the space.
Excellent.
I'm like, wow, I really don't plan as you're asking these questions. No, I'd never seen the space. And then I went, okay, how much spacing in between these paintings do I need? Well, and at that point, it's improvising. Mm. I guess that's what I'm getting at. I improvise. Yep. I make another piece if it needs one, you know, or I take out something I don't like.
But, do you ever find they look different when they're hanging in a gallery as opposed to when they're in your studio?
Yes. Yes.
And is that good or bad or both?
In my experience, so far so good. It's been better in the gallery. Mm-hmm. Because, maybe not as impactful because I have a relationship with the Heart series with all the girls. I kind of really had a whole story with each of them, right? There wasn't any of them that I was like, oh no, you're not allowed in, you know?
Yeah.
So it was more about spacing in there and like, how do I get them all in? I think for that show, I did, how many pieces? 23 pieces was the last show. Mm-hmm. That were mixed media, and then I had five paintings of the trees work that I did. That was in the front of the gallery. I'm trying to figure out how to answer your question. I don't plan. I don't know.
Yeah,
we just kind of get there and go, okay, let's hang this.
Yeah. Well, it works out. So
yeah.
I guess it doesn't need to be anything more than that, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of artists maybe are like that because you have to have an eye for design. And I think you don't want to compromise the feeling. Like, you don't want to have somebody come in and feel cluttered, mm-hmm. right? So you're going to have to sacrifice something. You have to have some kind of eye for design when you walk in. You know, whether you've taken design, you have a gut feeling or whatever, you don't want to overwhelm the viewer or give too much, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you kind of, I mean, in a way, you're probably better off having too many pieces because it's easier to remove than to add.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, you want to give each piece its own space. Like it needs those white walls. There's a reason walls are white most of the time.
Yes.
Right? Like, and they need to be able to breathe as their own piece. I mean, of course, how cool is it to have a whole collection that is all linked in a way, but by the same token, they do all need their own space. They do need to be able to breathe. They do need to be able to be seen as mm-hmm. a single piece, because I would imagine, if for no other reason, then it would be very unusual for someone to want to buy all of them. Although, you know, you proved me wrong there, because you sold all those 30 in your first show. So, like, you know, but that's
they
it.
Were small. It was a series. They were like ink drawings, little different.
Yeah, tiny bit different. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It still happened, and it's still cool.
The latest show was like, okay, how much weight does this carry? 50 pounds per 2 feet? Okay, we're good. Okay, yeah.
Excellent.
Like, so, oh yeah, the
I
resin.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, the resin gets heavy. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the resin gets heavy. And then also my partner, he's an extremely talented woodworker, and he does like artisanal furniture. And he's become my magnificent framer. So we kind of collaborate on how to frame and what wood to use. And so, you know, it's all the frames for the last show were done with like salvaged local wood. And it was really kind of a cool, I've never really collaborated with people. I definitely have never been in the position to have a professional framer. But that was really cool, because we got to pick things that went with the pieces. However, real wood and resin on these beefy pieces got heavy, but it's okay.
You made it work. No.
Yeah, nothing fell off the wall. Nothing was damaged. It's okay.
Thank goodness. So does that mean, like, I was going to ask you about your studio where you create, because I'm fascinated by everyone's creative space as much as anything else. What I've seen is that the woodworking studio, like, is that his and you've taken over part of it, or are you just in there sometimes and then you've got your own space somewhere else?
I think there's one video of me doing a pour in his workshop.
There is. Yeah.
With the blue. That was a commission I did actually for someone who lives in my town. It was really cool. When I've done a pour, I've done that, but you know, there's sawdust in here. and like dust particulate everywhere, so it kind of shuts down the shop. So it was just kind of lucky that he didn't have something going on for like that 48 hours that it needed to cure. Otherwise I had like the garage door taped off, because we have kids and it's fumes, and you know, I'm not staying up till 4 a.m. like over a million resin pieces like the good old days of, you know, going no ventilator and going like, oh, what is it bad for you? Like, you know, now I'm like, you know, respirator and, you know, taping doors shut so no fumes get into the house. And I just kind of laid them all out in our garage and poured them there was how it went for this last show. But I've been trying to kind of get away from the resin, but it's so hard. Like you said, when the flowers look so vibrant with it. So I'm in the process of trying to find a new medium to add to the mixed media.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. I've looked at the thing called, have you heard of liquid glass? Have you ever worked with that?
Yes, I have. I have heard of it. I've never used it, but I have heard it and seen it, and it's fascinating to look at.
Yeah. I've got it sitting in the drawer. So that might be my next thing. It might be something that it's just a one and done. It's not like a two-part thing. So I thought maybe I could paint it onto things and have it as a more controlled thing. We'll see.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
That's the reality, isn't it? Like, you've got to be aware of not just your own health, but everybody else around you when you are using things that, you know, toxic or
when you're single and young, and you're like, okay, I got to work in the morning, but I got to get this done, and that, you know, you're just like, oh, whatever, you do what you do. Yeah, exactly.
I am fascinated though. So now you're at the next stage of deciding if liquid glass or something else is going to work in lieu of resin. But aside from that, how do you decide what you're next going to create? Like, is there a sort of maybe I shouldn't even need to ask this, because we've determined you fly by the seat of your pants. So maybe there's no plan at all. Maybe you just
pick up something and off you go. I don't know. But what's that sort of that creative process like for you? Like the continuing on, the continuing to work with what you love, but add to it and do new things and that sort of thing. Like, what's that like?
Well, for me, I call them palate cleansers. It's like you just go heavy on one thing, you know, and it's like you need to take a breath of something else.
Yeah.
And so it's just the opposite direction of things. Like, been on this neon green tangent. I just have to paint it. I don't know why. It usually ends up getting covered up. But it's just something that happens, right? But yeah, so I was doing all this mixed media and this cutting and pasting and arranging and stuff. And I kind of went, okay, that's just like, I mean, after that show, it was a bit of a lull and it was springtime here. So that was nice just to kind of do some yard work and get out of the studio and do that. That was, I mean, obviously for a lot of artists, that could be a palate cleanser right there, just doing something completely different. But I wanted to get more, not into realism, but more figurative work. And there's a few pieces that I've kind of been scared to bare my soul with. And I feel like now that I got this last show out of the way, that was a lot of narrative with the hearts and the girls and the apologies and the healing hearts and the... that kind of storyline, that I'm feeling more ready to be more vulnerable with the work. So I'm kind of going into more, I guess, self-portraiture in a more realistic way rather than the cartoony facade way.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. And I guess in a like way... It's refreshing, but it must be a challenge to move from one to the other. That's quite a bit of difference between them.
Yeah, I think it's important to just to try new stuff. And like, as much as it's important to become a master of something, I guess, but if I'm always doing the same thing that I'm comfortable with, I don't think I'm going to get better. Whereas I feel like if I do this figurative work and really do something, how do I put it? Just to balance it. It's something that means a lot to me. I mean, I can't talk about it fully right now because I'm just working out the pieces. And it's like one of those things, you feel like when you say your idea out loud, it leaves you.
Yeah.
It's like this weird little superstition.
You don't want to jinx yourself.
Right? Yeah. Like, oh, it's going to be this great thing. And it's like this turd, you know. Just, you know, you've got to kind of finesse things. And because who knows? It might not. For me, I've found I can say something and then it'll go in a completely different direction midway, right? And oh, what happened to that idea? Oh yeah, that change, that's underneath this painting. Right.
So I want to know too, though, so because you've talked about the weight of resin and the weight of timber and how big and heavy that is, do you then when you're doing the opposite, when you're having that palette cleanser, are you working any smaller, any lighter, anything like that?
Yeah, these last pieces have just been on canvas that I've tacked onto the wall, like no frame, because I really have found that I enjoy much more with it working on canvas when it's got a hard surface behind it. And yeah, just done really light brush strokes, light washes of paint. Yeah, nothing heavy. I mean, layers, but very, very watery, very washed down colors, everything in acrylic. But yeah, kind of like dirty paint, water washes and things that you can see through all the layers. Right. And I really like when you can see the grain of the canvas. So it doesn't look too plasticky, because obviously resin, it's epoxy, it's plastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I like to have it more tactile and definitely lighter in every sense. Maybe not subject matter though, because I never really go down that road.
No, but it is, it's a fascinating thing that I think we do, where we sort of go from one thing to another, and you know, the subject matter might be similar and it might be deep or dark or whatever, but you're working on canvas and it's lighter and it's see-through and it's showing where it's come from, like, which is a total absolute opposite of what you were doing.
Yes.
But there's just something so cool about that. I don't know. I don't know that I've got any train of thought of where that's actually going, but it's just, I'm just fascinated by all the facets of what we do, and especially, again, and I know I've said this already before, but especially because of within mixed media, like, you've got,
right,
you know, because you're experimenting all the time with different things, you're playing with different things, so it doesn't feel as unusual as perhaps it might if all you've ever done is, say, for example, worked as an oil painter, and then you wake up one day and decide to, I don't know, create embroidered pieces. That's got to be a massive difference.
What, right? Yeah.
Like, is there anything wrong with that? But just saying, you know, that's got to feel weird.
Oh, fully. Yeah. I think
actually,
it's human nature though, right? Like, I mean, now I was like a serial monogamist, like, through my 20s. And like, you date somebody that's like, oh, this way. And then you break up with them and you're like, oh God. And then you go and like end up dating somebody who's your complete opposite, to, you know, you know, from the punk to the city boy to the, you know, this or whatever it is, right? It's, I think it's just human nature. Like, right, okay, and now for something completely different. Like,
yeah, you're right. Yep. Yeah. Because otherwise I just get too boring.
Yeah. And I mean, there's kind of a beauty in predictability too, right? Like, you know. Right. There's something comforting about that, knowing what to expect, or, oh, I love so-and-so's work, or, you know, but there's certain music artists like that too, right? Like, Lou Reed would do that.
Yeah.
I'm reading a book about him and Tai Chi right now. I guess that's why he came up. But every album would be like the opposite from the last one. Like, you just, nobody would know what to expect, right?
Yep. And I love that. I think. That's
I think there's a real beauty in that.
Yeah. Because as a listener, like, as a participant of the artwork, or the, you know, the other side of it, you're like, I don't know what this is. And at first, sometimes, especially if it's an artist you've involved yourself heavily in their last record or whatever, and then when it's completely different, it can feel jarring. Like, I don't know why this has just come to me, and maybe it's simply because I love them, and two, also because of your Australian link, but the very last album that INXS released, I struggled with that album when it first came out. I'm like, I think there was one or two things on it I liked and everything else. I'm like, what is this? It's so not what I expected from INXS. But now, years on, I realize, one, they were well ahead of their time musically, but two, it was just what they were doing. They were just reacting to what they'd done before and flipped it on its head. Like, you know, and it's just
for
us as the consumer. Yeah, they got bored. That's right. And for us as a consumer, that can be hard. Yeah, of course. It can be hard to accept it though, right? Like, you think, you know, my goodness me, I've looked at Kylie's work I expect.
Yeah. It feels almost, I think, to some people like a betrayal.
Yes. Yes.
You know, when you do get that invested, and I think it's, but again, like, when it comes to humans, the people that, you know, see you through all of your phases in life and everything, those are the friends that grow with you.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
Like, just keep evolving, and appreciating that, and going, oh, what are you doing now? Oh, why are you doing that? Oh, that's interesting. Like, asking the questions, staying curious, and not shutting the door on something new is really kind of beautiful. And I think as artists too, it's, you want to meet new people, right? And maybe somebody that saw your last thing wants nothing to do with you. But now you come out, you know, and they're like, oh, who's this person? They see this new thing you're doing and, you know, they get it, right? It's, mm-hmm. right? Because we're learning about ourselves and we're intrigued by others. I mean, I was a hairdresser for close to 20 years. I love people, you know. I love their stories. As a hairdresser, I met so many people that I never would have conversed with. And I love stories. And I think also maybe my faces were quite maybe sad looking because as a hairdresser, you hear a lot of triumphs, but mm-hmm. you do hear a lot of sad stories. And a lot of the time, I think my art for me personally was like a cleansing of that as well. Taking that on, I didn't really know how to fend that off. I kind of absorbed it a lot.
Yeah, I've often heard people say being a hairdresser is kind of like being a therapist because mm-hmm. if only for the fact that you listen a lot while somebody, you know, sometimes they might be unloading. Like, you mm-hmm. know, they might have had a really rough day, month, week, whatever. And oh, totally. You're that one person. They're trapped, not trapped, but they're in a chair. They can't go anywhere. You're there. Yeah. And especially if you've got a long-term relationship with them, like they've been coming to see you for quite a while, then it kind of makes sense that they feel safe and comfortable to get that off their chest. But then you as a hairdresser needs to deal with that too.
Right? Yeah. Just the healthy balance. And I don't know how much it pertains to art, but even at a certain point I realized, you know, some of your like older clients or their widows or their, you know, they don't have their kids living by them or, you know, you are the only person that physically touches that person.
Mm-hmm.
They come in every 2 weeks or so every week to get their hair set. Or, I mean, there's not many clients that do that anymore. Like the roller set ladies are kind of
not around so much
anymore, but you know what I mean? But, you know, when you realize like, wow, I'm the only person this person has any physical contact with as well. So it's different. It's a really different relationship. And I think after I left that career, you know, just talking about that last series I did with the hearts and stuff, I felt such a like kinship with so many people. I had a massive clientele. I was very successful at it. But I was bored with it and I thought I would last 5 years in that career. I was like, oh yeah, okay, I'll do it because it's kind of artistic. I don't mind people and then I'm out, right? Didn't work out that way. And I think when, you know, people move on, you're just a hairdresser.
Yeah.
Right? And they find somebody new and I had to put that somewhere because I took it so personally. I think in that year after, right? Like I wanted to reach out to everybody and how are you doing and what's going on and how's this person and how's that person? And, you know, they've got a new hairdresser. Like I thought they were friends, right? And I'm sure they would call me a friend still. It's just, but you're not. So it's very, I had to put it somewhere. So that was kind of a lot where a lot of that last series went. With the hearts and the girls
I think that's a pretty healthy and a pretty special way to process that, like those relationships, the loss of those relationships, but also just you would hold so much of that their emotion within you, and you've managed to create some pretty beautiful pieces of artwork because of that, which again is pretty cool.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's all part of all of our stories, right? Like
mm-hmm.
what comes from those experiences, right? Yeah. I think that's amazing. It's such a cool part about being an artist. Like I love that. I love that ability to emote in that way.
Yeah, you take life experiences, whether they're yours or someone else's, and turn them into something beautiful. It's not much.
You get it.
I don't think there's really. Yeah, I don't think there's anywhere where else you can do that, really.
Right? Yeah, where could you do that?
I don't know. Heart surgery, maybe. Oops, and now I've got a dog barking. So I wanna start to tie it up. Oh my goodness me. Claire barking. Very naughty. Claire,
what kind of dog do you have?
She's a Bull Arab cross Irish wolfhound, and we also have a Bull Arab cross American Staffy. Yeah. We like our dogs big here.
Yes, I saw that on yours.
In my household.
Yeah, your photos are beautiful.
Oh, gosh, yes. Thank you. So somebody's listening. Let's say I want to speak to the listener who's sat down, listened to this episode, and has gone, all right, something about what you've said has hit them and they would like to try experimenting with mixed media or perhaps, you know, with resin. I mean, you've already touched on the safety aspect, but like what would you sort of say to someone who wants to explore this, that especially if they've never really strayed from, you know, maybe they've been drawing portraits for years or drawing flowers for years or, you know, doing one specific thing. But something about what you said has kind of made them, hit them in the heart and made them want to experiment with other things, other mediums. Mm-hmm. What would you suggest to someone?
If they were thinking of dabbling in the resin part of things?
Both, either. So either just the resin and in pulling that into their art, or perhaps just launching in, playing with mixed media in general, like just experimenting with different,
you know,
mediums to create one thing.
I would say if it's resin, start small so you're not intimidated.
Yeah, don't go weighty.
I'm just crazy like that, and I must have, you know, I just got off on this whole like we don't know what's going to happen. Excuse me. You know, the risk factor involved, mm-hmm. I think was something was, you know, wires crossed there in my brain. But it's so available now. When I first was doing it was 2010 is when I started doing resin work with the flowers. And it was like boat plexiglass resin or something. It was some kind of epoxy for, you know, that didn't yellow. But yeah. I don't know how well that went. I mean, I use different things now and they've come up with so many different ways of mitigating the yellowing factor. So got one now that's got like a blue tint to it, right? Mm-hmm. But they have such different, so many sizes available now. I had to kind of go big or go home because, you know,
it was really kind of.
So I would say just start small. And you don't need a lot of color for, like when you're working with inks or watercolors, like you don't need to have a drawer full of paints. I think just start small because you can just have like, you know, so many things you read now and so many pages, it's like, oh, I was at the kitchen table. I was at, you know, the computer table shoved into the corner in our kitchen nook, you know, yeah. I mean, people are making amazing things in small spaces. Like, yeah. Just, you know what? Just find, if something looks pretty to you, like it's like a magpie experiment, you could call it. Is that shiny? Do I like it? Pick it up. Put it in your little box, you know. Oh, do I like this? Do I like that flower? Oh, I like that color. Oh, what's that? You know, oh, that's crinkly. Oh, I like how that reflects light. Oh, what's this? You know, kind of just collect. If you're interested in mixed media, because that's kind of, I kind of have so many boxes and it's like, oh, what's in this one? And every time I open up a different box, it's like, oh, right. I was saving that for this project. I think it's just draw your inspiration and grab what attracts you and start playing, I think is the main thing.
Yeah.
And like we were saying, like if you're not putting on a show, you don't have to worry about that. Just pick things that make your heart sing.
Really perfect words to live by, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right? Not hurting anybody.
That's true. That is true. So just before we sign off, I do want to just note that if I hear of a art gallery in Canada or, I don't know, anywhere really, that's collapsed, I might stop and think that perhaps they've got some of your work on display and it just got too heavy. That just didn't have the weight-bearing loads correct.
just wasn't properly.
It was wrong. Someone made the wrong decision there, the architect or the engineer or someone like that, and now they're paying the price. But anyway,
yeah,
sorry,
getting like a meter and a half square, it's not. Although I have to say they are thinner layers of resin because I do make the collages so that they're sculptural. They're not actually flat, right?
So, yeah, so it's
they do have a three-dimensional, it could be very bad.
Oh my goodness, Kylie, thank you so much for this conversation. It's just been an absolute delight to talk to you. Before we finish off, just let everyone know where they can find you online.
Well, I'm mainly on Instagram. I'm at Kylie O'Grady Art. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's it. I'm kind of working towards getting a website, but I do not have one because computers scare me. And, you know, the sculptural analog collage artist doesn't know how to set up a website. So there you go.
You got there.
But yeah, Kylie O'Grady Art on Instagram. That's me.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kylie. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kim. This was really lovely. Really appreciate that. That was a lot of fun.
If we were to provide you with some PayPal details or perhaps Buy Me a Coffee details, would you be interested in making a one-off payment to support us? In return, you'd be helping to keep the podcast going and would also get access to our bonus episodes. Let me know what you think via Kim at artsupplyposse.com or via Instagram.